This is Remote Ruby.
Have you any remote idea to the meaning of the word?
Hello.
Hey, what's up?
I'm just living the dream. How about you?
Oh, you know, not too bad. We're on the rotation this week with Andrew off and just you and me. So I feel like I need to take next week off.
You should. A well-deserved vacation.
Yeah, right.
Yesterday, last week was a dumpster fire of health. I got a sinus infection. Anytime I get sick, I'm like, obviously it's COVID. I went to the doctor and they're like, hey, we can't do anything for you because you're getting your second vaccine next week. We were just going to give you a steroid. Have fun.
Yeah. Like,
this wouldn't be a good day for me to try and speak words.
Yeah, right. My sister-in-law was completely out of it after her second shot. I went and picked up Tylenol and she wanted Tylenol and Sprite. That was what she wanted. And I like come by and drop it off and she looks like hell. Like it was bad. So she was like, thank you. And then just went right back to the couch, like chills. And it looked rough. So we got lucky because ours were, you know, just, I think the first dose was a really sore arm, maybe the next day. It wasn't like the day of. And then second dose was just a bit of a sore arm, maybe half as bad. And it was only the first day. So not too shabby.
Yeah, I got a pretty bad headache after the first. But I think I mentioned it. A lot of people told me that people who've had COVID seem to respond harder to the first. So the second one, I was like, oh, I have a headache. I laid down like 30 minutes. I was like, let's go. But Shannon was in bed for like a day.
Wow. Anyway. Well, what have you been up to? It's been a little while.
Well, I've been working at Podia still.
You haven't gotten fired.
No, that's good. Always, if I make it to the end of the week to write my weekly update, I just consider that a success. And I've been on bug rotation this week at work. So I haven't done anything super exciting. I've been kind of cleaning up my site editor mess. But
have we talked about bug rotation on the podcast before? What you guys do for that?
I don't think so. I'd be glad to share.
Yeah, you should just explain kind of how you guys do it, because I think that's a interesting thing. And it's nice to have a rotation on it. One person's not stuck with it, or it's not you build the feature, you deal with the bugs. It's a nice way to keep everybody on.
Yeah. So when I first started, it was kind of all hands on deck. Oh, this is a big bug, or like you like introduce this bug, fix it kind of thing. I think I don't even remember that far back, but we've slowly progressed over time to where now every N number of weeks, where N is the number of developers on the team, someone stops their product work and focuses on three things: helping out the support team. So if creators have questions and it's support doesn't know what's going on, or they need a dev to look at it, we help with that. The next thing is we work on bugs. So I actually help manage that process. So every Friday I get on a call with a couple of support people and we figure out the most like pressing bugs. IQ like two or three up. And then we also do some technical improvements. If we want to pay down some technical debt or drop some columns that are floating around still that shouldn't, stuff like that. We have a whole technical improvements board. And so we try to like kind of split it up. So it's a third of the week helping out support dev, a third of the week fixing bugs, a third of the week technical improvements. But it's just kind of, it depends on the week.
Yeah, that sounds nice. And it's probably a good change of pace once in a while to do that.
It's actually super beneficial for new hires too. They don't like immediately jump into it, but on your first rotation, you get to start experiencing parts of the app that you hadn't before.
Mm-hmm.
And like the app's pretty big. So it's impossible for us to be like, here's everything when you first join. It's kind of a good learning tool as well.
That just reminded me, and I'll have to find the tweet and link to it, but in the GoRail Slack, I posted a screenshot of a tweet that said, the first thing our new hire did was fix a bug that's been bugging him forever as a user before joining our team. He then breathed a sigh of relief and submitted his 2 weeks notice, WTF.
That rules.
Yeah, that's a nice thing. And I guess it's, as your team grows, that process will maybe change a little bit. You might have two people on, you know, rotation at once or whatever.
Don't wish that on us.
I think it's good because you need to commit to some amount of improvements and technical debt and stuff, not always new features or whatever. And then otherwise your option would be like, one person dedicated to that or whatever. And that wouldn't be fun. Someone just fixing bugs.
Yeah. It kind of helps keep everyone kind of on equal grounding. Cause
yeah,
when your time rolls around, you're like, okay, it's almost like it's time to pay my dues, right? It's not, oh, I was just on rotation. It's like, okay, there's been every other dev has gone through the cycle except right. This week I switched with Andrea. I guess maybe I do feel that way, but
yeah, it's good because, you know, you get that you'll be on a sprint or whatever, working on one feature, then jump to another feature and stuff. But this is a way for you to get involved with everything else as well. Stuff you haven't touched, and just make sure that there aren't any too big of silos. There's still going to be silos. You know, Windows payments, the best.
PayPal. You know? None of us want to know PayPal. We just let Jamie do that.
Yeah, I just was working on some rewardful stuff that Kyle, you know, built. And basically, I think that something was wrong with my JavaScript or something and it stopped tracking. But I've been tired of going into rewardful every month and then paying people. It takes 30 minutes to go through and grab their email address, go put it in PayPal, go back to the other tab and grab how much I owe that person. And then, you know, jump back and forth constantly for each person. And I finally went through and did. They don't have a way for you to pay out from rewardful. It is what it is. It's PayPal's fault. It's not their fault. But I did enable the mass payouts functionality, which allows me to download a CSV and import it and then click one button and do that. And I was like, this is way better, but I can relate. Their API is not good. With them doing payouts through PayPal, it's just got to be a pain in the butt.
Yeah, we can actually talk quite a bit about PayPal a little later on, because that's one of the things I was talking to you about before the show that I have to probably support in my side project. Yeah, the other thing that's nice about our rotation is that after a while, you kind of see the things that come up every week that support needs help with.
Yeah.
So you can then go build a tool in our like super admin system to let support start doing certain things that you like automate what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully support dev rotation gets a little easier. My dream is that we'll have 52 engineers and I'll only have to do support once a year. Same with on call. Hoping we get like 365 developers. So I'm only on call one day a year, but
yeah, that's the dream, right? Yeah.
Baby steps.
Yeah. That is, I think, the worst part about running your own business is you're on call 24/7. There's nobody to fill in the gaps. It's just rough. You want to be able to respond as soon as possible, but sometimes it takes 2 days to get back to somebody or whatever. Yeah. Having the team would be very nice.
So, Andrea released the Hotwire course, and you, as you always do, being clutch and giving away courses, were like, hey, I'm going to give this away. And then seven other people were like, hey, I want to hop on that train and give away a copy of it.
It was so cool. I mean, when you release a course, or Andrea, or, you know, anybody really, I want to support them, but I don't need to really buy it for myself. Somebody did that recently. Maybe it was you that started that or something. And I was like, yeah, I should do that. Just buy the course and give it away because I don't need it myself. Or maybe I do. And then I'll buy two copies. But
time will tell.
Yeah. I love that idea of, you know, buy a copy and give it away. So she nailed like 16 videos or something this weekend. It was crazy.
Like out of nowhere, just finished.
I was really impressed. So then it was like ready to launch. And I threw up a tweet and said, hey, I'm going to give a copy away. And then I think Jesper DM'd me on Slack and was like, hey, I'll match you. And I tweeted about that. And then you and, I don't know, six other people dropped in with matches. And it was amazing. So we gave away, Andrea threw in two other copies too. So with her too and the rest, like we gave away 10 copies this morning, which is nuts. The funny part was, it's common to give away something in a tweet and just say retweet and follow and we'll pick you. As it turns out, Twitter doesn't want you to do that. Their API is, we can only give you, and even in the web UI, I thought I'd cheat and browse and click retweets and see if I could pull out all the people. They don't let you do that. Only give you the most recent 100 or something. So yeah, that was like, uh-oh, this is going to be harder to give away than I thought. But I found an app that like apparently just caches the Twitter fire hose or something. I don't really know. I don't know how they somehow they're able to go and maybe use like a premium API or something, because Twitter has these more expensive API access or something. So whatever they're doing, they allow you to grab 3,000 retweets, which is better, but also limited. So probably next time, if I'm going to do something, I'll probably have to use like Gleam or whatever. Yeah, that's what a lot of people use on YouTube and Twitch and whatever. If they're doing a giveaway, that they use
the influencers.
Yeah, it's a little bit nicer where you can say, get an extra entry if you follow me on Instagram or go watch this YouTube video or do things instead of just retweet. So, you know, you can kind of do extra stuff and then keep track of it and just calculate entries. If you refer someone, you'll get 5 extra entries or whatever. So, yeah, you know, but everybody wants to charge for those. And I'm like, I'm just giving this away. Like, I don't want to pay to give it away as well. It seems kind of funny.
These damn creators, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So pretty amazing community, I would say. It was kind of blew us all away with the support.
Yeah. I was just hanging out in the thread, replying to someone like with a stupid tweet. And somebody's like, oh, hey, I bought your course too. And I want to give away a copy of it as well. Send me an invoice. And so, I mean, I was just hanging out being an idiot. And all of a sudden, Andrea was like, oh, I'll give away a copy of that too. So we're just...
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's just fun.
I think that's why I love the Rails community so much, or Ruby. They're amazing people there. Very supportive. That is a rare thing to find in a programming community.
Yeah. So that's exciting. It's fun.
And, yeah, it is.
Congrats to Andrea for going through the painstaking process of releasing a course.
Yeah, for real. I think she was pretty pleased with how it turned out.
Yeah. So... got some time to kill today. Want to do something, I guess, a little different than us talking about something happening in Ruby. I've been surprised working on another side project, and it is basically a e-commerce platform for physical goods, not digital goods, like my day job. And it's aimed towards like print shops, things like that, to spin up e-commerce sites for their customers. At first, I was like, we can knock this out. This won't take very long. And 3.5 weeks later, I'm like, what are we doing? So I kind of want to just chat about kind of some of the gotchas I've come across. And I don't know, just pick your brain, let you ask me questions so that I can actually think through things. And yeah, I don't know. Just
yeah,
kind of roll with that, if you're good with that.
Yeah, this is very timely because I think yesterday I published, or at least shared it with the first person Wednesday, it looks like, the jobs.gorails.com site that I've been working on, just to make a job board for people, because there's so many lately and people have been asking like, hey, can you share this with the community? And I was like, yeah, but also I probably should just make a site for this. But that's a similar thing where, oh, it'd be fun to make a platform thing where you could spin up job boards for different communities. But like you said, 3 weeks later, you're like, wow, there are a lot of decisions to make. Yeah. So it's very timely because we're doing the same marketplace-y kind of stuff. And I still haven't finished the payments on it. So I'm just like, I'm going to launch it. It's going to be free to post. And that's going to be where we start.
Yeah. So when I started, I thought, okay, I will use Stripe Connect because it is Bay. And people can connect their Stripe accounts. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to just offload everything to Stripe Checkout. So you can have your site for your campaign, as we call it. And I have a cart and you can add items to it. You can select your shipping option. And then I'm going to create a checkout session and redirect you to it. And that's cool because with Stripe Checkout, you get Apple Pay, you get Google Pay or whatever they call it. You get the shipping address for me, the name, the email. We're not creating accounts for their campaigns customers. It's not traditional e-commerce. It's meant for one-off things. And okay, so I'll listen to a webhook when checkout's completed. I'll clear out the cart, create the order in the database. I have everything I need from Stripe. Works like a damn dream. Okay, we need to figure out sales tax. Crumbles. I mean, crumbles. Okay. So Stripe let you define tax rates. And with checkout, you can even define dynamic tax rates. So you can be like, based on location, we'll apply the right tax. At that point, I have two checkouts because in order for me to tell them the tax rate, I would have to have the address or at a minimum, the zip code first.
Yeah, right.
For dynamic, I thought, okay, this is going to be terrible. Let me just experiment. What if I said, you know what? I'm going to create all the possible tax rates, which I recommend no one ever do. But I was like, I'm just going to try it. And so what if in Stripe, I had all my tax rates and I just passed them all as an option as dynamic rates? Okay, go to try and use one of those. They only work if you've defined the product in Stripe. So
okay, just
pass random line items in with...
And are you using the one-time price functionality?
No, like, so you have to be...
I mean, if you were going to do that, I guess.
Yeah, you would have to define... And
You know, Stripe's evolved so much because originally they didn't even have that. It was like only plans for subscriptions. But now they have the one-time product things, but it's still a ways to go.
Yeah, and I could make it work. I could, when a product's made in my system, I could send an API call, but I have variants for products. So I have to create a product for each variant. And if you take a step back, if I went this route, I would have to define the tax rates programmatically for every customer who connects, because I'm using Stripe Connect. So the tax rate has to exist in their Stripe account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if anybody's not familiar, Stripe Connect is basically Stripe's marketplace functionality. So you have your business and then other businesses connect theirs to yours and you can process payments on their behalf and take a fee or if you want.
Exactly. And it's awesome. Like, it's great. And I have to keep in mind, like, checkout's still new. It's only been out for a couple of years. So the fact that it works with Connect, period, is great. It just kind of crushed my dreams. Oh, because my thought was, okay, I'm going to have to support PayPal too, even though I've been pushing back on that. I thought, okay, I could at least run the whole thing through PayPal, like I do Stripe Checkout, where I'll get the shipping address from PayPal and all that. I don't need a checkout, but I think the system I've come to is I'm going to need to build my own checkout and just use Stripe Elements to take the money. And that makes me so sad because every screen that I have to design myself, even using like Tailwind UI, is like another reminder that I'm not a designer. So am I missing something there? Because I think what I can do now is use like TaxJar and get the tax rate as they put it in like their shipping address. And so I don't have to really fool with anything. I still have APIs I have to deal with, but I'm not like trying to make Stripe Checkout something it's not. I have all the tools now.
Yeah, I know that they're still working on a lot of the tax stuff because I think what they want to do is offer basically like TaxJar, but built in. But of course, then they're like, do we support all the countries that we support or, you know, roll them out one by one? And that's a good question. It doesn't seem fun or whatever to upload those or create those products and then the tax rates and all that stuff. I don't know. It isn't too bad, you know, if you got to then go design your own pages if you're going to do it yourself. And there's no real easy answer there because you either go kind of limited with Connect or the checkout stuff, and then you're totally from scratch if you go the other route. Write all the JavaScript, write your controllers, handle the errors, and save payment methods and whatever. It's not super easy. I don't know if there's a way to collect the zip code before you go to checkout. Can you add like the tax in if you were to get that information ahead of time, just as a, like an extra step?
That's interesting. If I'm using Stripe Checkout, I have to get their shipping option before they go to checkout. So if it is getting shipped, I could put, well, even if it's local pickup, I still need to do like a zip code for this, but I could make the TaxJar request and add it like, to the Stripe checkout as just like a line item.
Yeah, maybe. That was kind of what I was thinking. If it's minimal that you can do the tax portion ahead of Stripe checkout, then you can still use Stripe checkout and save yourself a ton of time. Mm-hmm. And then just do a little bit of extra work, hopefully, ahead of time. That would be ideal, of course, but
it's not that much extra work to add the zip code. And I could probably pass the zip code to Stripe checkout to like pre-fill it too. So it's not like extra work.
Yeah.
That's actually, that's a really, I was trying to avoid having to take any information, but it's a zip code. Mm-hmm. I'm not asking them to.
Yeah. And you don't even need to store that in your database or anything. You can just keep that in a request or whatever and that sort of thing. Because you could have them fill out the zip code and then submit to your controller and then create the checkout link and redirect to that server side.
That makes me happy. I like that.
Yeah, it would be pretty simple. You'll have to try out the Stripe checkout functionality in Pay. I just added a couple of helper methods.
Oh, cool.
You know, again, very inspired by what they're doing in Laravel Cashier around that. But
story of our lives.
Yeah, they've done a good job on all that. They are not doing any of the Marketplace Connect stuff yet. Maybe ever, I don't know. Until they have a need for it, it's kind of like Basecamp. They're not going to add features that they're not using themselves most of the time.
If you've been listening to the show for a bit, then you know that Jason and Chris have a crush on Laravel, and I basically battle JavaScript for fun. Regardless of what end of the stack and what language, they all have one thing in common, and that's Honey Badger. Stop wasting time configuring your tools and focus on shipping, knowing that no matter where you are, Honey Badger has your back. Oh, and speaking of shipping, the Honey Badger blog has been on fire recently. Seriously, and I don't say this lightly. Some of the best technical writing you're going to find all in one place. So go check that out. And while you're there, sign up for Honey Badger. Let them know he sent you. Thank you so much to Honey Badger for continuing to sponsor Remote Ruby and for not killing me for all the JavaScript errors I sent you this weekend.
The question I was going to have earlier was, you know, you're doing Stripe Connect. Are you doing, they have three types of accounts. And from what I've heard, it's going to kind of merge into one. And I'm assuming that they're all going to use the same like onboarding kind of process. But are you using the OAuth connection or the account linking? Because I was just working on account link functionality, which is basically like checkout where you have a user who's going to connect their Stripe account. You create this object. I think you create an account first. And you can pre-fill some info on it. And then you create an account link. And then that is like a URL that you can redirect to for that user to fill out that stuff. But then they also have the very simple OAuth, which is very convenient. So I was curious what you were using.
I'm using OAuth, but I started with account link. And there's a really stupid reason. And it's that with account link, you don't get the option to choose an existing Stripe account.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because you're creating a Connect account. So even if you choose like Standard or Express, you have to enter in all your business details, at least from what I found. With OAuth, I could just select my existing Stripe account to link to, right?
Yeah. Huh. I'm going to have to look into that a little bit because that definitely is something I've been meaning to look into because there are people who have their own Stripe account. But then if you're building something like what you're building at Podia, some people will know what Stripe is and some people won't. And it's nice if you can just say, hey, we created this for you and it's, you know, your admin. But this gets into what I've talked to the Stripe developers a little bit about. There's a lot of complexity in marketplaces because you have people who have a Stripe account, like you're saying, people who don't know what Stripe is, and you can redirect them. And that's like the Express onboarding or whatever. Because I think it's a standard Connect account if you do the OAuth, and then it's Express if you do the account link thing, or you can do a totally white labeled custom account. But then on top of that, you have to deal with how you want your payments to work. So what's a good example here? Let's take Shopify, for example, or Podia, where like the people who are selling, the customers of them are going directly to that person's website. So it's not like they don't know that they're on Podia and they're buying directly from that user, you know? And then there's like an Etsy or a Uber or Lyft or Amazon, where you're buying from, you're paying that company and they're paying out whoever did the work. Those are a different experience and like a different way to charge inside of Stripe. And you have to handle that. And then other people are giving refunds. Amazon's going to give you the refund. And then that person who sold the thing isn't going to get their money or whatever. But if you're like selling directly from Podia, people are going to ask you for refunds and you want to be able to refund them. You don't want to have to ask Podia to do the refund. So there's two totally separate types of marketplaces that way. I didn't even know that when I was like, yeah, I'll build marketplace support. It totally makes sense, you know? So
one of the first SaaS apps I ever built, it never launched, but was a marketplace like that where you hold funds and disperse funds, but you could also use those funds to buy other things. It was like a true marketplace. There's actually besides the fact that I want to use existing Stripe accounts, there's another reason that I prefer to do pass-through where like we don't touch the money, besides the fact that it's complex, is that the tax laws in the US for like state tax, sales tax for marketplaces is you are responsible for collecting,
remitting
those taxes. And if you are not a marketplace, you do not have to do that. Shopify does not have to do that. And so I'm like, okay, that's another plus for, at least right now, you connect your own Stripe account. We don't touch the money. It's yours.
That's one of the reasons why I think a lot of people are using Paddle, which is built on top of Stripe, actually. They do some sort of merchant of record or whatever. You know, they're the one that shows up in the credit card statement and all that. And they handle the taxes and things for you, which is nice. So that I definitely like. And that's what I would want to lean towards, you know, leave it to your customers to deal with, because then you don't have the complexity as the platform developer. And that's, I think, what we're going to do with the job board app, where you can spin up a job board and we're going to do probably the Express or standard Stripe Connect and then do like charges directly on your account. We'll take an we won't even take any application fees. We'll just charge you monthly,
right?
$100 or whatever to run your site. That's
it. It's so simple.
Yeah. You don't want to go down that other route.
My co-founder had floated the idea of like maybe charging fees per purchase. And I was like, please, no. I think, you know, keep it separate. Like we have our Stripe account, we charge our subscription. If I'm supporting PayPal too, then whatever I can do to keep it unified. And I think, because if I built a marketplace and had to support PayPal, that would mean I would have to use Braintree.
Yeah, and that's one of the hardest parts of maintaining pay is Stripe and Braintree differences and everything. Stripe has such good APIs, and then Braintree's, I don't know how to convert between a monthly and a yearly subscription. Could do that on your own. And you're like, what?
It's your entire business.
What am I paying you for? So yeah, it's not great. And I don't know if Pay will eventually just integrate directly with PayPal. Somebody was telling me over email that they may not be supporting Braintree forever, or I don't know. It sounded like they were struggling with whether or not they're going to keep going with it or whatever. But then, you know, like that's been a staple of, I think Braintree's been the main payment provider for GitHub and stuff forever. So.
I think Basecamp's listed on Braintree's website.
Yeah. And then GitHub sponsors, though, uses Stripe Connect or whatever. So that's been an interesting one to be on that side of the marketplace, because with GitHub sponsors, like you have a thing that's, hey, here's your view of our payments to you. And it's like a Stripe hosted page and you can see like the recent payments and stuff. I'm like, okay, that's kind of interesting, but also a little strange feeling. It's not built into GitHub, which you would expect them to do, you know, a white labeled thing, but they're like, no, just go to the Stripe page for it.
Yeah. Well, if Stripe's doing it, then we should all just go off. So a question I thought about while we were talking. Okay. So I have a lot of edge cases now that maybe you're like, just give up on thinking about edge cases. But so let's say that I go with, let's provide zip code on the cart before you click checkout. I calculate the tax and then in checkout, the customer's, actually, I'm getting shipped to an address in another state or like a different zip code. Like I'm kind of hosed there. Well, I'm not hosed.
Well, but it's still okay if the billing address is different than the shipping address, right?
Right. So, I see. So I would actually take the billing zip code, not the...
Yes. You'd have to be explicit about that or whatever. Like, you could be buying a gift for somebody else and it should still use your zip code for billing for tax purposes and stuff. Where you have two houses or you have four houses like DHH, you know?
Yeah. I'll have to research that because if it is billing, then I'm fine. If it's shipping, then I probably... I would hate to think that one zip code is the reason I can't use Stripe checkout. That's going to cripple me.
I haven't looked into that since I'm just doing digital stuff. I haven't looked into any of the shipping functionality there. So I don't know that one, but that is an interesting question.
Okay. So let's say now we're getting into the fun stuff. So with Stripe checkout, now that I'm thinking about this question out loud, maybe it's a dumb one. But okay, so a Stripe checkout,
yeah,
you add two items to your cart, you go to checkout, like you're on a different page, right?
Yeah.
So you've been taken away, like I've set a cart for you, but you're not modifying that cart anymore. So if I build my own checkout and I have a cart, when I go to start the order, should I actually create an order instance with a snapshot of that cart? Because my thought is, what if... users like, I've opened the checkout page. Oh, I want to go add another item to my cart, another tab. And I think about this because people do whatever they want. So like I add another item to my cart, but it hasn't reflected on the checkout. But if I'm using the cart when they actually pay to build the order, it's going to have extra items in it.
So if you used Stripe checkout, you have to pass the items into that, right?
Right.
You would listen to the webhook for that and say, these are the items you purchased and not whatever's in their cart, because it would have to be whatever went through Stripe.
Right.
Because otherwise, yeah, a user could have, say, two tabs open. One is on the checkout page. The other one's adding more crap to the cart. And then you go back and check out. If you are doing that on your own page, though, I feel like you could use the optimistic locking. Maybe you need to have a server-side record for the cart or something and use optimistic locking on that. So you know that, oh, we submitted our cart and our payment information, but like the version number in the database doesn't match what we submitted. So we know that the cart changed. That's kind of what that feature is for. And I think that would probably solve your problem nicely, where you could collect the payment information and then just say, hey, it looks like your cart changed since you submitted this form. You know, just review it and then resubmit. And maybe that's the way you could do that. And then you could probably, you'd have to do a little bit just to make sure that you like save the payment method ID or something, so you wouldn't have to collect that twice. But, you know, that I think would probably work.
That's so fascinating. So I've only used pessimistic locking and I've used the crap out of pessimistic locking. This would solve that problem. At a minimum, it'd let me raise an error and be like,
right,
what have you done?
It's like, hey, looks like your cart changed somewhere else. So here, we're going to just let you know. And then you can double check and make sure this is what you want.
And that's only if I need to not use Stripe checkout. But as of yesterday, I was like, I can't use it. My life is awful.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I would still try and use Stripe checkout if you can. You know, I think
so too.
You will lose that. You know, you're editing your cart in a different page or whatever, but it's very clear on that page, I'm purchasing these items, because the left side of the Stripe checkout view, if people aren't familiar, is like the line items that you're buying, and the right side's your payment details. And like when you click submit, you know that you're purchasing the things on the left. If you're in a different tab adding other crap, you're going to go see that wasn't added to this page. So we need to go back and recheck out.
Yeah. But that's also great, because what happens is when my Stripe webhook comes in, I'm already storing the carts in Postgres, like attached to a session. So when it comes back, I'm actually passing as metadata the cart signed global ID to Stripe.
Nice.
So that when the webhook comes back, I can destroy the cart and the line items. So I won't even care. If you added 30 line items after you went to checkout, I'm just going to wipe them away after you come back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Makes sense to me.
I have such relief.
It gets so tricky so fast. the whole just being very clear to your users what they're buying and what it will cost and taxes, and then handling that because you're jumping between sites too, like the payments and the webhook stuff now is fairly complex. It's just hard to wrap your head around that. And then I'm like trying to do the Stripe Connect stuff and add that to pay and make it a bit more intuitive, like helpful to kind of say, you know, these are the three different types of charges we can make, like a direct charge on a account or a destination charge or like a separate payout thing. Those are real messy.
I don't envy you.
Yeah. It is one where I'm going to probably end up talking to quite a few people to like figure out how do we organize it and just explain it clearly so it's easy to pick the example. Because like you read through the Stripe docs and they're like, well, are you going to build something like Lyft where the customers pay the platform and right. then the platform pays out these people? Or are you doing something like Shopify where you're paying the merchant directly and then maybe they take a fee, maybe they don't. And then you have to decide, does the merchant know about Stripe or not? It's fascinating.
Yeah, it's an interesting problem and not one that I care to solve.
Yeah, I would rather not. But it's clearly one of those things that people struggle with, which is where it's a good problem to work on for pay and jumpstart and stuff.
Totally, yeah.
I would rather not.
At least there you're working with Stripe APIs versus trying to figure out how to do all this without that. That's what I wouldn't want to do is, okay, well, I know how to take credit cards, but now I need to get all this money into an account and then start dishing that money out.
Yeah, all the accounting and everything for that. And, you know, you're kind of acting as an escrow if you're Uber or Lyft and whatever. There's a lot of complex stuff. So, yeah, I think probably the first iteration on it will end up being just like the simple Stripe Connect and we can do charges on another account and that's it. But yeah, there's two layers to it as well. Like we need all the regular payments stuff we already have because you're going to pay for the platform. So you're a regular Stripe customer of the business's account. But then those people can pay for your stuff and then also be a merchant. And they have customers which are like, kind of the same as them, but they're attached to this other Stripe account instead of yours, and separating all that, knowing who's a customer of what is, that's crazy. So making that smooth and well documented has been a challenge so far. But luckily the job board project I have is, you know, the perfect example of I have to go build that and think about it and then make sure it's clear for me to understand and maintain. But unfortunately, it feels like these are, you know, that there are certain problems that you solve. You do it very poorly the first time, but it works. And then you do it better the second time. And then the third and fourth time, you're like, I can do this very clearly because now I understand the concepts. I'm like at that first attempt, not the fourth attempt where I'd like to be. So,
yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. Just along for the ride.
Well, that's how we got to go. Just go build stuff and learn and who knows what. You end up learning so much cool stuff along the way, things you didn't even think you were going to learn.
And one of the coolest things, like I'll end on, is all this side project stuff, as much as I do it because it's mentally stimulating and just fun to hack on stuff, there are a lot of things I learned that I actually take back to work and like use at work. And yeah, that's always such a good feeling.
Yeah, there's a ton of that stuff. I think that's been really useful for me to just like fiddle with ideas. And can I go build this in Hotwire and 6 hours or something on a, you know, Saturday or whatever. Just playing with an idea and seeing how you can approach it in a different way, you know, from the way you would do things at work normally, ends up really giving you a lot of good ways to think about things because you really need sort of that other angle to get an idea of, oh, there's a whole other way of thinking out there that I didn't even know of. And that stuff's really useful.
Yeah. Well, I could keep talking, but I think that's a good stopping point for today.
Yeah, sounds good. Hopefully I'll have some more payment stuff done on Pay and Stripe Connect soon. I kind of got wrappers for all that, account link and the billing portal and Stripe checkout and stuff, and all that's working. But right now they're very bare bones wrappers, and doing some modeling around like keeping track of payouts and transfers and other stuff that you don't necessarily need in an app, what we're talking about, where you're like just straight up connect your Stripe account. because that's already, you can go find that in your Stripe account. We don't need that in the platform. Right. I think it'll be nice to start there and then go deeper and say, here's the other models and stuff you can add if you want to keep track of this stuff. But yeah, there's a lot to it. That's for sure.
For sure.
Cool. Ooh. Well, right. Yeah, good catching up. And I guess we'll talk next week.
Yeah, sounds good. We'll see you.
See ya.